भवास भवाद अबोध बोध पराभवस्थावर बोध जातो यावान्न जिज्ञासत आत्मतत्वम् यावाक्रियस्थावरिदाम मनोभाय कर्मात्मकम् येन शरीर भंडा. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruit of activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear, and as long as one is absorbed in fruit of activity, he has to accept a material body. Generally, people think that one should act very piously in order to be relieved from misery. But here we find in the teachings of Lord Rishabhdev that pious or impious, this material world is a place of birth and death. Janma mrityu jara vyadi dukha dosanu darshanam. These are the real serious problems in this world. And although through science and technology we are very expert at trying to minimize or counteract the sufferings of life, we do not understand the cause of suffering in life. Just like recently I was speaking to a very high person in the Maharashtrian government who is in charge of combating AIDS for the entire state. It's a very serious disease. And another one of our devotees is in charge of giving relief from leprosy from the entire state of Maharashtra. Through medicine and through technology, gradually we are discovering how to relieve some of the pains and sufferings. But a human being is supposed to inquire, what is it that brings about such various types of misery? A tree, if you cut it down, according to its capacity, it will try to heal itself. But a tree cannot inquire, why is this person cutting me down? Why is this happening to me? Human life is meant for this type of inquiry. Atatho brahma jigyasa. That as long as we have a material body, it is subjected to three types of miseries. Ariyatmaka, aribhautaka, aridhaivaka. Miseries caused by the body, the mind. Miseries caused by other living beings. And miseries caused by natural disturbances. Ariyatmaka means sometimes we are inflicted with physical disease. It's not a question of being educated It's not a question of being wealthy. Everyone has to suffer disease. We see so many times recently, a couple months ago, we visited very, very wealthy people's house. And the mother, she had this terrible, terrible infection on her foot. And there was nothing any doctor could do. There wasn't even any pain relievers that could relieve. She was just laying there crying and crying and crying. And sometimes there's arthritis or mental anxiety. It's not a question of having a high education. Even if we are very, very hygienic, still, these things attack us beyond our control. And of course, the miseries of the mind. Who could say that one class of people are more peaceful in mind than another? In fact, in America, it's the richest people that go to psychiatrists and commit suicide most frequently. Not that the poor people are any more peaceful, but certainly money does not buy peace of mind, nor does high education. Right here at our Bombay IIT, we have some students here tonight, 3 students from IIT. And they were telling me that just this last year, several students committed suicide. Correct? How many? 2. These are the most educated young men in the entire country of India. But they're frustrated. So much pressure, so much anxiety. This is called adhyatmaka. There's no material arrangement that ultimately can relieve us from the adhyatmaka miseries. And adhibhautaka means miseries caused by others. We have so many competitors that are trying to destroy us. The more successful you become in this world, the nature of this world is the more successful you become, the more enemies you make. Right? The more people want to tear you down. The more people criticize you. Both material life and spiritual life, this is the case. So misery is caused by other living beings, sometimes even our own family members. Beyond our control. I often use the example, when I was a little child, Mr. Rockefeller, his son, was killed. He was murdered and is eaten alive by cannibals while he was doing a sociological thesis for his college graduation. And he said, Mr. Rockefeller said, I will never see another happy day in my life because my son is dead. He had no control. This is adhibhautaka. And sometimes mosquitoes are biting us. There are so many innumerable ways that other living beings could cause us pain in this world. And then there is adhidaivaka, sufferings that are caused by natural disturbances, such as too much heat or too much cold. It's like, this is Tarun Krishna. He's a friend that has just come. He was just in Amsterdam, and he was freezing. It was terribly cold. Plus he has terrible arthritis, and this freezing weather was causing him so much suffering. And then he was coming to India, and now he's burning heat. This is adhibhautaka. What to speak of floods? When it was about a year ago or so, traveling on airplanes is supposed to be a very distinguished and sophisticated way of traveling. I got in an airplane, and all of a sudden the monsoon started raining. And it was such a flood that the plane was delayed for 28 hours, and no one was allowed out of the plane. And they turned off all the ACs and everything because they can't keep it on. And people were so miserable. They were literally threatening to beat and kill the pilot. Finally, they had to let everyone out into the waiting room. But 28 hours? Because of a little too much rain. And we read in the papers, a few years ago, there was an earthquake in Mexico. There was an earthquake in Iran. Earthquake in the Soviet Union, Russia. So many hundreds and thousands of people just immediately finished. And now they say earthquakes can come anywhere, at any time. And even in America, when people want to go on vacation and relax, they go to Miami. You've heard? Florida. Usually elderly people, when they simply want to get away from it all and relax, they go to Florida, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and they just sit on the beach in the sunshine and relax. Last year, tornado came. So many people killed, wounded, property destroyed, huge waves. They spent their hard-earned money to go on a vacation, to suffer in tornadoes. This is called Adidaivaka. And this is material nature. We cannot stop material nature. Whether we're pious or we're impious, material nature will act on us. If we're very pious, we will get more of the good results of material nature. If we're very impious, we will have to suffer the consequences of too much suffering in material nature. It's just a matter of time. These are laws of nature. It's like one law of nature is what goes up must come down. If you throw a ball as hard as you can into the sky, you know it's going to come down. Some people ask the question, I know so many terrible, sinful, rascal people, and they're suffering, and they're enjoying like anything. And I know so many nice, kind-hearted people who are suffering. How is this possible? But for every action is an equal reaction. If you throw a ball hard enough, it goes up for a while. If in the past we've had enough pious activities, we're not going to come down for a while. But sooner or later, everything comes. The laws of gravity is what comes up must come down. The law of karma is for every action there is an equal reaction. When it will come, that we may not know, but we know absolutely 100% for sure. It will come. You give in charity, you will get tremendous benefits. You cause harm to another, you will be tortured. It's an irrefutable fact. It is a law of nature. So therefore, foolish people, with their own speculative minds, they try to just perceive things. They do not want to understand what is underlying this world that we are living in. But here Rishabhdev is explaining that pious activity is good, impious activity is bad, but ultimately they both lead to suffering and ignorance. We must go beyond karma. Parabhavas. Parabhavas means all our endeavors are ultimately defeated if they are not based on spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge means to understand who we are. We are not this body. The body is always changing. Tonight in this room we have young boys and girls. We have some teenagers. We have middle-aged. We have people who are becoming old. All of these different bodily conditions. And the soul is moving, rotating through all of these conditions. Am I the young body I had 50 years ago? Or am I this old body I have now? Who am I? Do we even ask? We're so caught up in trying to decorate these bodies and provide securities for these bodies and the bodies of others, we never even ask, who is it that's living in this body? We are so pleased and happy to be in this wonderful house of Mr. Prem Kadia and his good wife. They invited us tonight. It's a beautiful, nice house. But the real enjoyment of this house is not simply seeing the furniture. It's knowing Prem and his wife. It is their house. They are the people residing within the house. They are the enjoyers of the house. And they are also the sufferers when something goes wrong. But unfortunately, in human society, we spend our whole lives just trying to create nice security and protection and decorations for our house, this body, and we never seriously inquire, who is living inside? Who am I? What is my purpose? Is my purpose just to have a nice house? The purpose of the soul, the consciousness that is transmigrating through all the stages of this life, is to realize its relationship with the Supreme. Najayate mriyate vakadachi nayambu pavavadabhavadi. Krishna says that the soul is eternal. It is unborn and undying. And human form of life is specifically and exclusively meant not only to hear theoretically, but to realize the eternal blissful nature of you and me, the self. And this begins by inquiring submissively from the proper source. It is through this submissive inquiry that the doors to liberation are opened in our life. Here we find Lord Rishabhdev. He's giving the most important gift to his children. Rishabhdev was an avatar of Sri Krishna, and he was the king of this world. He ruled the world very, very strictly according to the principles of God consciousness, Sanatana Dharma. By his example, by his teachings, he led all of his citizens on a path of piety and spirituality. He taught his citizens that being pious, being good, being charitable is a stepping stone for the higher realizations of the eternal self. And after ruling the kingdom for many, many long years, it was time for him to retire. His children were grown. He had many sons. Many of them he got married. Some of them decided to become sannyasis.
There were 9 Yogendras, very famous, very, very learned saints. But his eldest son was Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj was suitably married, as was most all of his other children. And they were to take over all of his responsibilities. Just like here, many of you may have businesses, and you know that someday, in the not too distant future, you will have to retire, and hopefully you will have some children who will take over your businesses, take over the responsibilities. So Rishabhdev was leaving the kingdom of the world to Bharat Maharaj, his eldest son. And before leaving them, he gave them the greatest gift in all of creation. He gave them transcendental knowledge. He is here in this verse speaking to them. Especially he is speaking to Bharat, who was a family man who was going to take on huge responsibilities that were going to affect millions and millions of people's lives. Some people are under the misconception that spiritual knowledge is meant for sadhus, brahmacharis, sannyasis, or old people. But not people who are active, dynamic, and productive in this world. For them, let them produce, let them be successful, let them leave their empire behind, then they can take seriously spiritual life. But Rishabhdev wants to teach all of us that before beginning any endeavor, that is the time to have a very strong understanding of truth. Prahlad Maharaj taught his little friends who were only 5 years old Sanatan Dharma, Bhagavad Dharma. And they complained, "Prahlad, why you are teaching us this Bhagavad Dharma is for old people. Now we're children. We're playing. Let us just play." Prahlad Maharaj said, "Yes. Now you're playing, and you'll waste the first 10 years of your life just playing without understanding the goal of life. And then you'll have to enter into studies. And then you will spend the next 20 years of your life completely engrossed in studies with no time for spiritual life. And then you get married, and you have to begin your profession, and you have to work with such incredible energy to get your feet off the ground in your occupation, and to raise your children. In another 30 years, you don't have time for spiritual life because of that. And then, you're so old, your brain just does not function properly. Your senses, you're beginning to have arthritis, and you can't see properly anymore, and you cannot digest food properly anymore. And you're already like an old piece of bamboo, which is very stiff physically, mentally. Almost impossible to bend an old piece of bamboo. If you try to bend it, it cracks. To try to change your habits at the end of your life, Prahlad Maharaj says, it's very, very difficult. But of course, better late than never. Prahlad said, plus, if the goal of human life is self-realization, why should we save the worst part of our life for God and give the best part of our life for everything else? The worst part of our life is when we practically can't do anything. That's the time we say, Krishna, I surrender to you. What do you have to surrender? What is the consciousness? When we cannot do anything else, then we say, all right, Krishna, just see how great I am. I am your devotee. As long as I could do something else, I don't have time. Do you think Krishna will take us seriously? Therefore, Prahlad, explaining this whole syndrome to his friends, he said, Komara acharit pragyo dharaman bhagavata iha dhulabam manusan janma tar apyat dhruvam arathadham. That from the very, very tenderest age of childhood, this is the time to take Bhagavad Dharma seriously. This is the time to inquire into what is the truth, what is the goal of life, who am I? Who is God? What is my relationship? Why is there suffering in this world? This is called bodha. It's called intelligence. Abodha means we may have big, big PhDs and master's degrees, but we do not even know who we are, or what is the goal of life, or what is the purpose of life. Buddha. The word Buddha comes from the word bodha. It means intelligence. He was a prince. He was a wealthy man. And his father tried to hide all miseries from him. But then when he left his palace one day and saw an old man walking with stick and saw people crying at funeral, he began to ask, why is there suffering in this world? I will also become old like this. I will also die like that. What is the use of all my enjoying all of these wonderful things if ultimately that's what it ends in? There must be some purpose in life. And he began to very, very seriously inquire and seek truth. Therefore, he is called Buddha. Machchita madgata prana bodhiyanta parasparam. The wise people, they gather together in such assemblies like tonight to discuss what is the truth, to open their minds, to cultivate this bodhi, this proper intelligence, and then to live by it. This is the real gift of God to all the world, transcendental knowledge, and the path of truth. Bhakti. Rishabhdev, he's done a fantastic job of preparing this kingdom, so it's a wonderful gift that he's giving to his son. But along with it, he's telling Bharat Maharaj, before you begin, first, you must very seriously understand what is the goal of life. And everything you do should be done in pursuance of the goal of life. He is here explaining, do not waste your time simply with pious and impious karma. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is impure. And we remain attached to this material body. To become detached from this material body is the only solution to suffering and death. How do we become detached from this material body? By becoming attached to Krishna. That is the solution to every problem in the world. to become attached to Krishna. To simply become detached from this material body will give us no real pleasure. And the soul is seeking pleasure. Now we're seeking pleasure through our egos and through our minds and through our senses. The soul is pleasure-seeking. When we seek pleasure in the reservoir of all pleasure, in Bhagwan, then we naturally rise above the dualities that are constantly being inflicted upon the body and the mind. To become attached to Krishna is not difficult. It is the easiest and most natural thing in all of creation. To become attached to Krishna simply begins by hearing his glories, by associating with people who are attached to him, and by chanting his holy names. Krishna is none different than his name. When we associate with something beautiful, we have to become attracted. If you put metal near a magnet, it will be attracted. If our consciousness comes in contact with Krishna, it will be attracted, because Krishna is all attractive. And how to put our consciousness in contact with Krishna? Krishna is none different than his name. When we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare, we are exposing our hearts to the all-power, infinitely magnetic potency of Krishna, who must attract us. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is explained that any way you put your consciousness in contact with Krishna, it must be attracted and purified. We read about Shishupal. He hated Krishna. He was always fearful of Krishna. But because he was always thinking of Krishna and always saying his name, even though he was saying it in all terrible contents, still he became purified. And ultimately, at the time of his death, his soul was attracted to merge into the body of Krishna. And when Maharaj Yudhisthira saw this, he asked Narada Muni, why such a terrible demon like this attained a state of mukti that great, great yogis aspire for after years and years and years of tapasya? And Narada Muni said, because he's always thinking of Krishna. Because Krishna's all attractive. And to hear the glories of the Lord, to hear the words, the philosophy of truth, of dharma, attracts our hearts, attracts our minds to God. And this is the purpose of human society, to come together. Machchitta madgata prana bodhyanta parasparam. To purify our intelligence by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. The greatest boon, the greatest benediction is simply this. We must ask very seriously, whatever our age may be, what really are we looking for in life? We should be analytical. we may think, I want a good husband or wife. I'm young. Or I want more money, more prestige. Or I want better health. Or I want a very nice family. But why do we want these things? Why do we want money? Why do we want prestige? Because we're thinking that by having money and prestige, we will have some security. And we will find happiness and pleasure in this and be able to give happiness and pleasure to others. But in these things, is there real happiness or pleasure? Can any of these successful acquirements in our life guarantee us happiness and freedom from pain? Not at all. Ultimately, if we analyze our life, what we are all looking for is love. The pleasure of love. This is the subject of Rishabhdev's teachings. How to find this. How to realize and experience this in our life. In this great land of India, Bharatvarsha, the land of Dharma, we are so fortunate that there is such an immense heritage of spiritual culture. Nowhere else in the world is there even a minute fraction of the history and culture based on spiritual principles of this land of India. Recently, one of our very dear friends departed from this world. He was about 86 years old. And his name was Father Bede Griffiths. He's a very, very famous author of the English language. He's written dozens of books, very high spiritual books. And when he was a young man, he obtained his master's degree in Oxford University. He was from Great Britain. And the whole world was at his feet. To be a graduate of Oxford means so many opportunities. And he was top of his class. But after years and years and years of just laboring over these books, after he graduated, he just decided, I'm going to start thinking about what I'm going to do with all this knowledge now, rather than just completely merging myself into a world of competition. I have to try to decide what the purpose of life is. So we went into the forest with a few of his friends and lived in a nice cottage in the forest. And just contemplated, meditated. And while he was walking through the forest, he came upon a Christian monastery. And he went in there and he talked to the monks, and he decided to become a Catholic monk, Benedictine order. So he dedicated his life in this way. He was already like a professor. So he was educating poor people and doing all kinds of seva as a monk. And after some years, one other Catholic monk of the same order came to visit their monastery. He was also an Englishman. He was a Frenchman. And he said, you know, these people in India, they don't know what is real religion. They are really suffering people. If you really want to do seva for God, you go to India and preach this message of the Bible and convert all these people who are merged in ignorance. So he thought, yes, this is very good. This will be a great seva to save all these fallen people. So he came to India and he started preaching that everyone should convert. You are all not knowing what is God. You do not know what the truth is. You don't know what is in my book. He did this for some years. And he was mixing with common people. And he came to the realization after some years that the common field workers, the common rickshaw drivers, had a deeper understanding of God consciousness than he did, or than any of his colleagues in his monastery back in Britain. He was thinking, what is it about this Indian culture? There's a veneer of poverty, and there's a veneer of suffering and strife and corruption, but underneath it all, there's such a deep, deep heritage and culture of spirituality. So he was thinking, if I want to be God conscious, rather than trying to convert these people, I should learn from these people. And that's just what he did. He started reading Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, the Puranas, the Vedas. He started meeting different... He ended up taking sannyas from a swami. And his name became Dayananda Saraswati Swami. And the people in the monastery in Britain thought he was going crazy. What's happened to you? So he started writing books explaining the great, great wealth of spiritual knowledge that is in Vedanta. And he said, if the Christians really, really want to understand the higher truths of what Christ taught, you have to study Vedanta. You have to understand what is the simple common sense of the common field worker of India. What type of faith and realization they have of the afterlife. And all of his books were commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, trying to convince the people of the West of the great, deep spiritual culture of India. And in the entire worldwide Catholic Church, he became, even the Pope declared, he was the father of interfaith for the whole Catholic Church. And all the monks in all the monasteries of all the orders consider him guru. I have visited. They say he is our guru. The common Christians don't know. But those who are deeply, deeply studying and trying to understand their own religion, they know that this land of India, the culture and the philosophy of this Indian is supreme. Such a culture. Our Guru Maharaj was invited to Russia. And one of the greatest scholars, a Professor Katowski, who has several PhDs in religion, philosophy, sociology, anthropology, he said to Guru Maharaj that, Swamiji, at the time of death, everything is finished. Our Gurudev said, the simple Indian who's on his hands and knees in the rice paddies making 1 rupee a day, doesn't even know how to write his name, doesn't even know how to read a single letter of the alphabet, he knows I should act good, because if I don't, in my next life I will have to suffer the consequence. He said he's more educated than Professor Katowski with all his degrees, because he knows I am the eternal soul. Bharata bhumite hoila manusya janmata janma saratak karikara para upakara. but because the land of India, the people within, are so unfortunately abandoning the deepest, richest culture on the face of the earth to chase after the fleeting, superficial mirages of Western civilization, this country is being cast into terrible suffering. But even in this suffering, there's something else. When I was speaking with Mother Teresa, she told me that she has dealt with people all over the world. She said when she's in California, London, or Sydney, she sees fabulously wealthy, powerful politicians, businessmen, scientists. She said she looks in their eyes, and there's no hope in their eyes. The eyes are the window to the heart. She said they're fabulously decorated, but I see no hope in their eyes. She said to me, but this India is such a country, such a spiritually awakened country, that people on the streets of Calcutta who are dying of starvation and disease, when I hold them in my arms and they look at me, I see hope. They know that I may be like this now, but because I've done good, there is a good future. They have faith in God. She said that hope in their eyes is a greater wealth than anything else that we can obtain or acquire. So whatever our position may be in society, whether we be sannyasis, whether we be brahmacharis, whether we be students, whether we be lawyers, whether we be business people, whether we be mothers or grandmothers, or fathers or grandfathers, or whether we be farmers, or scientists, or engineers, the emphasis should always be to pursue every aspect of our life in harmony with the truth, with the real needs of the soul. We should be pursuing the real happiness that the soul is longing for, and we should be sharing that with our loved ones above and beyond everything else. This is the culture of India. This is Sanatana Dharma. And whether we are a king like Rishabhdev, or whatever our occupation may be, to hear the truth regularly in the association of saintly people, and to live by those words in our life, is the real fulfillment of all of our desires. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Who is? Declared in the Vedic scriptures to be the Yuga Avatar. The incarnation who appeared in Kali Yuga to teach the most effective process of attaining pure consciousness, the ultimate fulfillment of life, liberation in love of God. He taught a method of self-realization, which is common to all classes of men and women of all ages. Because, you know, there's a great need for unification in society. There is so much disunity. Disunity on the basis of ages. There's something called the generation gap. Huh? And the more you become more westernized, the more this generation gap will start affecting your own families. Because there is a mantra in the West, which everyone follows, that the young people say, anyone over 35 you cannot trust. It's called a generation gap. Whatever your parents tell you, if you want to be fashionable, you have to go completely against them. Huh? Believe me, that is the conditioning which is deeply rooted in every young man's heart. And then they get their karmic reaction when they become a parent and they have to deal with the same thing. What to do? So there's a generation gap. There's a gap of people, different colors, different castes, different educational groups. What is the common denominator that can unify everyone? By which everyone can harmoniously, lovingly grow together spiritually. That is the congregational chanting of the holy names of God. It's like these little children here, they're looking this way, that way, and every other way. Philosophy, how much can they listen? But everyone loves to chant, to sing. And Lord Chaitanya also taught a process. You see, this mantra that is none different than Krishna himself is all attractive. And the more we give our consciousness to the mantra, the more we naturally become attracted to God. And as we become attracted to God, we become detached from the sufferings of this world. He taught a way that our body, our mind, our souls, everything is actively involved in the supreme process of yoga. He taught that during the congregational chanting of the holy name, we should gracefully offer every limb of our body for the pleasure of Krishna. It is called dancing. But it is not like the dancing of this world. Why do people dance in this world? A young girl wants to be a good dancer because she wants to attract a young boy. And a young boy wants to become a good dancer to attract a young girl. Huh? And old people, they want to be good dancers to attract their husbands or their wives. Or professional dancers want to attract everybody. But in spiritual life, we dance simply because we want to attract Krishna. It has nothing to do with anything material. It is simply for attracting Krishna. As we are it is just like our whole body becomes like an orchestra. You know how in an orchestra there's a melody and the violins and the cellos and the drums and the trumpets, they are all unifying together to make one beautiful harmony, to make the song beautiful. So similarly, every part of our body, every part of our mind is like an instrument. We want everything we have to be in harmony to make the beautiful song of the glorification of God's name beautiful. So as we are singing, we should sing with great attention, concentration, and devotion. And Lord Chaitanya taught simple method of dancing. There's two asanas that he considered the supreme most of all asanas, the culmination of all asanas. They say Shirshasana is the father of asanas, and Saravangasana is the mother of asanas, and there's so many different things. But ultimately, Krishna says, Yogi namapi saravesham madgatenantaratmana shradavan bhajate omam same yukta tamamataha. Of all yogis, those who surrender to God with humility are the highest. the ultimate perfection of all the yogic processes, bahunam janmanamante jnanavam mampapadyate vasudeva saravamiti samahatma sudulabha. The ultimate purpose of all yoga and all religion is to surrender to God with humility. So when we fold our palms, not just as a formality, namaskar, but when we fold our palms, this is a very, very ancient mudra. We take it so cheaply today, we just go like this. Even if we hate somebody, we say, namaskar. We don't even think about what we're doing. But this is a very, very ancient mudra which has been created by God and has been practiced by all the great saints and sages and rishis since time immemorial. What this means is, with a completely prayerful heart, we are submitting ourselves before our beloved Lord. And because God is within everyone's heart, that is why we do this toward other people. It's not just a social formality. This means to pray with humility. And we are praying with all humility in offering respect to the Lord within another person's heart. That is the meaning of namaskar, pranams. So when we chant, when I am chanting the holy name, you should all listen very carefully. Let that name of God, with all attention, just enter through your ears, into your mind, and into your heart to purify your very soul. And as it is entering, as an act of humility, we should hear the holy name like this. And then when you chant, to repeat, Lord Chaitanya taught to raise the arms like this. This raising of the arms, it's something very beautiful. It is reaching out for what is above. And what is above? The infinite grace of God. We are reaching out for the infinite grace of God as we are chanting His holy name, because that grace and that grace alone can remove us from birth, death, and all the sufferings of material existence. That grace alone can fill our hearts with the ultimate fulfillment and satisfaction, that through our natural occupation we can express that for the benefit of others. We are reaching out and offering our body, our mind, our words as a sacrifice to the holy name. So now I would like everyone to participate.